Good evening. So there's this small town in Paraguay. It's called Catura. And some of you guys might have heard of this before. The small town of Catura. Or something like that. I might be butchering the pronunciation. It's got 10,000 people living in it. And this town of Catura is basically consumed by this huge landfill for the larger city of Asuncion. So there's just tons and tons of trash everywhere. Every house is just a bunch of slums. Everyone there is living in poverty. They're surrounded by piles and seas of just disgusting just refuse. And the people who live there are these trash divers, and they look around to try to find the most valuable pieces of trash that they can find and just resell those things, or, you know, find something to help repair their home or what have you. They're scavengers. They're just surrounded by this disgusting area, and they're all poor and pitiable. It's a gross town, this disgusting town of Catura. And there was this land in the Middle East long ago called Canaan. And there was this city amongst Canaan, the city of Jericho. And these people in Jericho and these people in Canaan, they were constantly doing all these misdeeds. They were mean to the people around them. They were violent. They were rude. They were immoral. And to God, they were disgusting. There was this scent, this aroma floating up to him, and it made him turn up his nostrils. It made him reel back with disgust. These people were surrounded by ethical trash. They were doing wickedness to one another. They were living lives that were completely wrong. They were glorying in their wickedness. These people were just living lives as if they were surrounded by a landfill. Living lives as if they were amongst the trash. They were a part of this trash. And there was this woman in Jericho who was the trash of the trash. She was a prostitute. She was a harlot. She was someone who sold her body. She was degraded. She was disenfranchised. She was out there on the fringes of society. No one cared about her. No one helped her. She was disgusting. She was a bottom feeder. And all of this, this Canaan, this Jericho, these people within, this trash was about to be cleaned out. God was going to wipe this whole area clean. Joshua and the people of Israel were coming in. They were going to take it for themselves. They were going to create a righteous kingdom. God was going to lead them into battle. He was going to go out before them, and he was going to remove all of this trash, this Canaan, this Jericho, this woman. And it was justice, right? What they did was wrong. The way they lived for so long was wrong. The generations and generations of misconduct, of immoral activity. It was trash, and it should be taken out. What God was doing was right. He was getting rid of it. It was justice. And sometimes, I feel like trash. Sometimes we all feel like trash. Maybe we've just ignored God for too long. We've forgotten his love. We've forgotten his promises. We go about our lives as if he hasn't touched us, as if he hasn't done anything for us. And we still have these things that we've learned, this knowledge in the back of our minds. We know that he does love us. We know the kind of sacrifices he's made for us. But sometimes it's just not enough to turn us around. It's just enough to make us feel disgusting. We've had an addiction. We've gone back to it time and again. We try to fight it, but not hard enough. We can't get rid of it no matter how hard we try, perhaps. Sometimes we don't even try to get rid of it because we cling to it. It brings us comfort. It brings us some fleeting joy. We go back to it over and over again. But somewhere we know that it's wrong. Somewhere we know that it's immoral. Somewhere we know that it's disgusting. And it makes us feel like trash. We might be violent. Whenever we are irritated, we start to tremble with rage. Everything we see turns red. We lash out at people, sometimes verbally, sometimes physically. We want to just go out and make sure that our word is heard and make sure that our anger is understood. Try to tell people what's wrong about them. Try to show them what they're doing should stop. And we feel so good about it at the time. We feel like we're always right. But somewhere in the back of our minds, we've been told, we understand that what we're doing is wrong, is disgusting, and it makes us feel like trash. Maybe we're manipulative. Maybe we take advantage of people. Maybe we're just abusing their emotions. And we get so much out of them, and it makes us feel better. But somewhere we know that what we're doing is disgusting. And somewhere we feel like we're trash. Maybe it's something that's been done to us. Maybe we've been abused in some way, and our image of ourselves has been mutilated, has been twisted. And we can't help but think of ourselves as something which isn't worthy. We can't help but think of ourselves as being disgusting, as being trash. Sometimes we just read the Bible, we see the Christians around us, we've read everything, we see, we know these laws and the expectations, and we just feel like we can't meet the standards. We feel like we can't quite live up to what's expected. We make mistakes all the time, and how do you get past that? When you mess up over and over again, we feel like we just can't measure up to what's needed. And it makes us feel disgusting. It makes us feel like we're trash. And perhaps God is disgusted with us, right? What does that mean? What does that mean for us? It's something that we want to ignore, because if God sees us this way, then we must really be worthless. And if we are worthless, if we are disgusting, then will he come and will he wipe us out? Will he wipe us and bring in something new? And if he did, wouldn't that be justice? And doesn't that terrify us? That if I am trash, I deserve to be removed. There's this town in Paraguay called Catura, and it's essentially just a large landfill. And the people scrounge around in all of this trash and try to make a living from it. And there were these people who had a sort of vision for the town, especially for the children. They wanted to create a music school. Education is very lacking in Keturah, as you can imagine. Everyone's so impoverished that they can't really afford to have good schools. But maybe they can at least teach them music. And so they use what they have. They have people gather together and help out. They have a special carpenter who takes the trash and he uses it to make musical instruments. And they have someone bring these musical instruments made of recycled trash and start to teach these children it. And they create an orchestra. These instruments, they're just made from the things that surround them. They have cellos made from hollowed out oil drums. They have violins made from paint cans and oven trays. And they start to get more and more children involved. They continue to make more and more instruments. And eventually people start hearing about this. They start being called the landfill harmonic, the recycled orchestra of Keturah. And people start taking notice. People start donating and bringing it to people's attention. And eventually, these kids with these instruments made of trash, these kids in this little town in Paraguay, these children who have been surrounded by a dump, their world is a dumpster, they were able to go on tour with famous bands, with large orchestras, and show off what they've done with the trash that was recycled from their hometown. The beauty of the music that they've created with these recycled instruments. And from this worldwide audience that they gained, from all this attention, Keturah itself has begun renovations and has started improving and being made more into a town that isn't completely just filled with all this poverty. Regular education is starting to take place, and they're starting to have more, a better form. And being the city overall is being taken care of much better now. And it's improving, and renovations have begun because of this recycled orchestra, making these instruments from trash. And in a city within Canaan, the city of Jericho, there is a woman who, though she was trash, would be changed. Let's go to Joshua chapter 2. Joshua chapter 2, starting in verse 1, says, "Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. 'Go look over the land,' he said, 'especially Jericho.' So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, 'Look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land.' So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab: 'Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land.' But the woman had taken the two men, and she had hidden them. She said, 'Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gates, the men left. I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly, and you may catch up with them.' But she had taken them to the roof. She had hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan, and as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, 'I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard about how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show loving kindness to my family, because I have shown loving kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. Our lives for your lives,' the men assured her. 'If you don't tell where we are going, what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land.' So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. Now she had said to them, 'Go to the hills, so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return, and then go on your way.' The men said to her, 'This oath you made us swear will not be binding on us, unless when we enter the land you have tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and unless you have brought your father and mother and your brothers and all your family into your household.' her prospects for life were trash. And she was exchanging them. She was thrown out. She was forgotten by her own society. And so she did the pragmatic thing. She made sure she looked out for her household, for herself. She was doing more than that. She made a deal with these spies. And it would be easy to say, yes, she did something nice for them, so they did something nice in return. And that just makes sense. But just so that no one can get this confused as being a deal just between Rahab and these two men, God destroys Jericho in a very interesting way. He tells the people of Israel to run a few laps around the wall and then shout out as loud as they can and toot their horn. And then God topples the wall. And then the people flood in, and that's how they're able to take the city of Jericho. But notice where Rahab's house is. Rahab's house was built on the wall. That's how she's able to lower them down outside. It's not the Israelites who are destroying this wall. They don't target every area except for hers and make sure that her structure of her house doesn't fall down. It's God who's making sure that her house is standing when they take the city. The spies could not have controlled that. And Rahab afterwards doesn't just move on to some other area. She joins the Israelites. She hasn't made a deal with these spies. She has made a deal with God. She is convinced. She has faith in this God. She believes that he is God in the heaven and God below. There was this man who was in the lineage of Abraham, and he would father one of the greatest tribes. His name was Judah. And he was a man of a lot of pride. He was a man whom God treasured. He received a lot of blessings. His children would become a great nation. And he ends up having twins at some point. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 38. Genesis chapter 38, starting in verse 27, going to 30. Genesis 38, verse 27 says, "When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. And as she was giving birth, one of them put out his hand. So the midwife took a scarlet thread and tied it on his wrist and said, 'This one came out first.' But when he drew back his hand, his brother came out. And she said, 'So this is how you have broken out.' And he was named Perez, which means breaking out. Then his brother, who had the scarlet thread on his wrist, came out, and he was given the name Zerah." This scarlet thread represents which one of them was going to get the inheritance. These were children born into an important family, born right into the line of Judah himself. And that scarlet thread represented what they would get from their father. Perez, he's born into this world, fighting for his right, trying to be born first, pulling his brother back in so that he can come out, so that he can emerge first. And it's not quite enough. He's fighting. He's struggling. But he's incapable of receiving his inheritance that way. Though he's born into the right people. He's born of the Israelites. Though he's born into the right family. He's born a child of Judah. He's struggling to get this, to earn this. And we don't hear anything from his family for a long time. They don't seem to matter that much for a while. Until one day, his family does receive a scarlet cord, does receive a crimson rope. When his great descendant marries Rahab, it's that instance, it's Rahab who puts this family on the map. What these Israelites were trying to win by works, by following the law, what they were trying to win by their birthright, Rahab won by her faith. After Rahab, Boaz is born, who marries Ruth. After Rahab, they have Jesse, the father of David, who becomes king over all of Israel. After Rahab, through her lineage, once she begins, this is when God plans out that they will have Jesus himself, will be born from this family. This was a deal that Rahab was making with God. She wasn't just saved from this immediate problem. She wasn't just rescued out of this city. She was completely cleaned up. She was fixed. Her life, her situation, her as a piece of trash, was recycled, was cleaned out, was taken care of, and she was turned into an instrument. She was turned into something, someone who was working for God's plan. He didn't just forgive her. He turned an enemy into his own child. She was an echo of God's eternal plan for all of humanity. One small, little story, but she would represent what happens to each of us. She's the beginning of the renovations for mankind. The lesson of Rahab isn't that once you stop sinning, then God will come to you in power and then you will have eternal life. That's not what she did. She was a prostitute right up until that moment when she made that covenant. The lesson of Rahab is that if you will trust God, you will resist trusting in anything else. And that's what we need to do. And we can't be transformed by God. We can't be reshaped into an instrument for him until our trust is in him completely. And it doesn't matter what kind of trash we were before. It doesn't matter what family we were born into. It doesn't matter what kind of wrongs we've done in our past. It doesn't matter the kind of lifestyle that we've led. Because when we trust in him, he will clean us and reshape us and use us. And it won't be comfortable. It will be an experience, right? Rahab was risking her life when she protected these spies. And perhaps even after the spies left, she may have suffered some abuse when the guards came back. They may have realized that she tricked them. And she was risking a lot. And in the same way, when we look towards God and we say, I want to be your instrument, I want to trust in you only, we are risking a lot. We're having to give up those things which bring us comfort now, these things which bring us our happiness. We become vulnerable when we decide to trust in God. And it means that we are giving ourselves over to whatever changes God has planned for us. And that will involve tribulation. That will involve trials. That will involve persecution. We are going to have to exert something when we go through this change. But as long as our trust is in God the whole way, then we know that it can happen, that we can be transformed. It will be worth it. And instead of feeling this threat of justice on us, instead of feeling like we're trash, we can feel the embrace of God's mercy. And we can be remade. And together, we can become an orchestra, a group of beautiful instruments for God. So let us bolster our faith. Let us come to God wholeheartedly so that he can embrace us as children, shape us into his instruments, and use us to renovate the world. Thank you.